You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Nathan Zagura, the notorious V.I.C. Vic Carucci here. It is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Still to come, Gerard Cherry will join us at around 2:40 p.m. Eastern for his thoughts after another difficult loss by the Cleveland Browns at home to the Jacksonville Jaguars, 32-28 in this one. And Vic, we just heard from the head coach, Rob Chudzinski. And he mentioned the possibility of not even knowing who this quarterback will be this week. That has got to be tough on him. This losing's got to be tough on him. What's your sense of the head coach and where he's at mentally now on a team that, you know, really he hasn't even gotten a fair shot to even build continuity with it at any point this season?
Well, I think that's the first place I start. I think this has been a very unfair circumstance for a first-year head coach. Now, nobody said it would be fair. When you sign up for this job, you basically sign up for unfairness along with any breaks that come your way. But I think he's had more than his share of bad things that have happened, particularly at the quarterback position. Things that you don't, that you know can happen, but you don't count on. The series of injuries that occur and just the inability to get any traction whatsoever there. And I think Brandon Whedon's game, while maddening in many respects, has been sort of like the thing that I think was right for him and for this coaching staff to sort of figure out. But by now, had everything else gone the way you'd hoped it would, starting with Brian Hoyer staying healthy and playing that out, he might not have seen the field again. And the fact that you're back to this point and then still searching for yet another guy because you can't keep him healthy, just as you couldn't keep the other two other quarterbacks healthy, is beyond unfair for a first-year head coach. The other thing is I applaud him for his aggressive mentality, but I think there are times when he has to rein that in, and I think yesterday was a classic example, and I got the sense asking him that question during the interview, as he said, hindsight's 2020. Yeah, it's easy to go back and say, hey, coach, that wasn't really a great idea, was it? Easy for us to say that, and I always say that with respect because when decisions are made at the time, they're made under the duress and whatever they are of being a head coach. You're paid to make them. You're paid to make the right ones. And you get fired if you make too many wrong ones. But that said, he was staying true to himself. Sure. But I got the feeling that as he thought about it and probably didn't sleep real well last night, I'm sure it came back to him and said, you know what, if I had to do it all over again, just let us get out of that half.
How much of the quarterback injury situation, as we've now seen every quarterback on the team get injured at least once, in most cases multiple times now during the season, falls on this offensive line that has given up now the second most sacks on the season. And in fact, if you break it down, not only have they given up the 42 sacks, which is the second most, they've also given up the most quarterback hits as well, second most quarterback hits as well this season. So quarterback's taking a punishing blow behind this offensive line this year. Do you think that has to do with a combination of the line not playing as well as perhaps you'd hoped? We know Mitchell Schwartz has struggled, obviously, at right tackle. The scheme of Norv Turner asking quarterbacks to hold the ball a little bit more, knowing that Jason Campbell and obviously Brandon Whedon don't get the ball out so quickly. Because it is strange to have your quarterback continually being knocked out of football games.
I think it's all of the above, Nathan. I think it was the perfect storm, or is the perfect storm, when you have less mobile and slower to release quarterbacks such as Whedon and Campbell, when you have a line that isn't great when you are trying to go at a pace or calling plays that require shallower drops and allow the ball to get out quicker, and that's not the case. This is long developing plays, long developing patterns. This is the constant search for the big play, and to do that, you ask your linemen to hang in there a lot, to hold their blocks a long, long time. This isn't the line for that, at least across the board. You mentioned Schwartz, and I think the questions also emerge at the guard position, and honestly right now the center position with Alex Mack. And I think that safety from the bad shotgun snap that he had, which was just, to me, something you would not see coming from Alex Mack, thinking of him as the reliable, competent, strong center that he has been, and now a guy who's in his contract year, and maybe a guy who doesn't see his future, probably likely doesn't see his future in a Browns uniform. And I think those are I think those are trouble spots. I think that's not a good thing.
It is no,
you know,
no.
In terms of mentality, I'm saying not a good thing in terms of the overall, to your point, of what's going wrong, why quarterbacks are getting beat up quite a bit. I think you got a combination of bad things.
Yeah, it is a confluence of circumstances that are leading to a very difficult situations where the Cleveland Browns don't know who their starting quarterback will be in week number 14. And we know that there's a very good chance it will be the fourth different starting quarterback this season in terms of name. We also know we've gone back and forth between various people.
So sixth different starter, fourth different name.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Seriously, I keep coming back to this. That just, I've seen crazy stuff. There is impossible. And I've seen crazy stuff happen in this league. I've witnessed a lot of crazy things. That's the craziest. I can't top that one. And I'm using as a comparison, not just in crazy Cleveland history, I'm comparing it against the backdrop of crazy NFL history and of being someone who considers himself a student of this league, a historian of this league, the books I've written and such. I started last night. I just was a little too wiped out and tired between the holiday and everything else to really stay at it all night and research it. But I got to find something as insane as we've seen this season. And that's what kept coming up to me was this six different starting thing in 13 games. John in Dallas wants to join us on the line now. Hey, John.
Hey, Vic. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
Hey, welcome to our world, Vic. We've been doing this 40-some years. So it's not even funny anymore. I want to ask you, do you think they're going to expand the rosters in 15 or 16 or maybe even early as 14 with the rash of injuries to quarterbacks and it'll allow you to have five more guys on your Sunday roster so you don't have to constantly pull these guys from the scrap heap and let them practice? And actually, that's another point I want to make, and I'll hang up. I think these guys actually need more practice because they've taken it away from them. I'm not using an Allen Iverson analogy here, but they do need more practice because it's killing these guys. Hey, go Browns.
Thank you very much. Great call by John in Dallas here. Two things, John, on the question of possible roster expansion. That has been discussed. I saw a stat where injuries are up roughly 14% in 2013 over the previous year, and a lot of us suspected there were more injuries in general. This isn't just the quarterback position, but a lot of them, of course, are happening there and on other teams, I mean, besides the Browns. So it will be talked about. The thing that will probably prevent it from happening is the cost factor. Is that when you expand rosters and expand jobs, you also then have to expand your payment of players, and you're creating more jobs, which is obviously for the players' end of it, it's a good thing. But relative to the math of doing business in the league, the numbers crunchers will get involved, and you'll have owners who say, I mean, you'll have owners who'll say 53 is too many. I mean, they're just, that's just kind of the way it is in football. To your point about more practice, I think that's valid to some degree, that less practice time, which is again part of this collective bargaining agreement that players wanted to scale this back, has probably caused the product itself to not be as good in many instances. And I think it's felt particularly in short preparation weeks like Thursday football, whether it's Thanksgiving Day or just Thursday night games. And from the quarterback position, the only thing I would say is that I don't know, Nathan, if you're ever going to prep a quarterback other than your starter in enough of a way that he, if he has to step in either during a game or over a course of other games because that previous starter is out, is ever going to be sufficiently ready to play to the level you need him to play. It does. I know you had Colin Kaepernick last year, but I don't think you have a lot of stories like that in the NFL.
No, it's
right? I mean, they're going to practice with backup guys. You know, I'm just
right,
saying you're
right.
The meaningful snaps.
Right.
I hear what John's saying, and
but they also knew what they were doing with Kaepernick, and
yeah,
Harbaugh
yeah,
was
yeah.
getting him
he
his
was,
reps, and that was his
right,
guy, and it was
right,
that
right.
was a kind of a preordained
a setup,
thing.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no question.
That
about
doesn't
that.
Happen often.
No, that does not happen very often. Let's go to Mike in Youngstown now. Mike, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
I would like to say one thing before I get into what I want to talk about. Don't worry about beeping me or buzzing me. It's all good. The other radio stations in the Cleveland area and your own radio station, some of the people that do these shows should be they should listen to your show because you guys are very professional. You give fans a chance to talk, and it's not just something that it's a big joke. Well, if you're a Browns fan, I'm 63 years old. I remember seeing Lou Groza playing at Pitt Stadium. It's not a joke. It's something that we take near and dear to our hearts. And yeah, they're struggling, but once again, I want to thank you for your professionalism.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Before the season, and this isn't a trick question. This is part of my point. I'd like to know how many people that are so upset, how many wins did they predict the Cleveland Browns were going to have before the season? If many of them say more than 5 or 6, I'm not even quite sure that's true. But one thing that we don't have that the other teams in our division have is a quarterback that's played all year. If you took Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, or Baltimore, and you put, I don't care, forget that. Look what Green Bay's going through.
They have not won since they lost Aaron Rodgers.
Right, and I understand what Aaron Rodgers means to everybody, but it's a point that when you said you were going to do, you know, research into this about, you know, some of the things that have gone wrong for us, I don't think I can remember ever possibly going to use 4 quarterbacks in a year. Mm. I don't. It's almost unheard of. And you know what? These guys, the passion that I was telling my wife last night about, you know, how bad these players feel when they lose games. And then to hear Joe Hayden with the compassion in his voice and almost to the point of tears, you know, they're professionals. They get paid. But they don't want to lose, and they take it personally. And it's a tough thing. I don't think it's a joking matter. A lot of people, you know, I don't go paint my face orange and brown and, you know.
No, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. You take your football seriously. You are a thoughtful fan, and not just because you said nice things about our show. I hear the way you're analyzing this and your realistic sense, your grasp of what's going on. And you've seen a lot of it, and you want nothing more than to see it turn around, and I appreciate that, and I respect that. And there is something, and we've talked a lot about it on the show, something to be said for the emotions getting to an athlete like Joe Hayden. And I've heard the sarcasm that, yeah, well, all the millions of dollars a guy like that makes, you know, he's crying, like, you know, is that there's like a contrast to that. But forget that. It's not. At some point, you're a player and a human being, and yes, you are well compensated for what you do. But you're also a competitor. If you're in this game, if you've gotten to this point, your level of competitiveness is not to be believed. And it doesn't matter. Any person listening who's played sports or plays rec league sports or just has fun, considers himself or herself a competitor in even a board game or a computer game, okay? That doesn't come close to what is in the heart of what a pro athlete does, and especially these guys. You look at the record and say, well, they just don't care. Well, it's, nothing could. You don't even want to see some of, or you should see, I guess, the expressions and hear some of the conversation that we're around on a regular basis. And I will tell you, it will affect the way you look at this. It's easy from the outside to say it's just a bunch of millionaires, and whatever happens, they're going to laugh it off because they're well paid. But it's not that simple.
It
really isn't.
No, not at all. And these guys want to win, and especially a guy like Joe Hayden, to be as good as Joe, there are guys who can probably make it to the NFL that may not be that competitive or wired, but they're not going to achieve at the high level. To be a big-time achiever in the National Football League as Joe Hayden is, he has got to be a super hyper-competitive guy, and you saw that. And the one thing I just want to say about Hayden real quickly is I remember last year I went back and I looked at every touchdown Joe Hayden's ever given up in the NFL. He's only given up one in his career when he was in press coverage, and that was at the goal line against Jordy Nelson early this year on a throw that nobody could have defended from Aaron Rodgers to Jordy Nelson.
Right.
I want to see, especially because it seems to me that opposing teams are scheming to stop our pass rush by getting the ball out quick. I'd like to see more press coverage, especially with Hayden, just because he's good at it. I'm Buster Screen and Chris Owens. Hopefully they can handle it, but Buster's in the slot. But I'd like to see a little bit more of that in those critical moments.
I agree with you. The only reason I think you don't see it is because of the nature of this scheme, the way they kind of keep with the zone blitz. much of what Ray Horton's trying to achieve is pre-snap confusion. And I think when you're tight up on press, I think that takes a little of that ability out of you. You've narrowed down what you can do with those looks. So I think some of that is related to that. You're making.
I know he did that a lot with Patrick Peterson
in
Arizona.
And Patrick Peterson, of course, a bigger physical guy. Now, yeah. The next point I was going to make is the size of our corners, I don't know if there's a level of trust that they can handle themselves physically.
I hate Joe can, no doubt.
You would think Joe's pretty jacked up for being not the biggest of guys, but you're right. But I do think it ties into what the way Horton has schemed this defense. Anyway, we want to hear from a guy who knows, and let's get into this with him, because he certainly knows about DB play and special teams play and every other kind of play. He is the one and only Gerard Cherry, and he's going to join us next here on this Therapy Monday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Vic Carucci, Nate the Great, with me here, Zagura, on ESPN 850 WKR.